Now, Sandy.
Ned stopped me there. He wanted to go inside and call his mother, he said. Tell her he was okay, just eating dinner at the barracks with Sandy and Shirley and a couple of the other guys. Tell her lies, in other words, as his father had before him. Don't you guys move, he said from the doorway. Don't you move a red inch. When he was gone, Huddy looked at me. His broad face was thoughtful. You think telling him all this stuff is a good idea, Sarge?
He gonna want to see those old tapes next thing, Arky said dolefully. He was drinking root beer. Hell's own movie show.
I don't know if it's a good idea or a bad one, I said, rather peevishly. I only know that it's a little late to back out now. Then I got up and went inside myself. Ned was just hanging up the phone. Where are you going? He asked. His brows had drawn together, and I thought of standing nose to nose with his father outside the Tap, the scourgy little bar that had become Eddie J's home away from home. That night Kurt's brows had drawn together in that exact same way. Just to the toilet, I said. Take it easy, Ned. You'll get what you want. What there is to get, anyway. But you have to stop waiting for the punchline. I went into the can and shut the door before he had a chance to reply. And the next 15 seconds or so were pure relief. Like beer, iced tea is something you can't buy, only rent. When I got back outside, the smoker's bench was empty. They had stepped across to Shed B and were looking in, each with his own window in the roll-up door facing the rear of the barracks, each in that sidewalk superintendent posture I knew so well. Only now it's changed around in my mind. It's exactly backwards. Whenever I pass men lined up at a board fence or at sawhorses blocking off an excavation hole, the first things I think of are Shed B in the Buick 8. "You guys see anything in there you like better than yourselves?" I called across to them. It seemed they didn't. Arky came back first, closely followed by Huddy and Shirley. Phil and Eddie lingered a bit longer, and Kurt's boy returned last to the barracks side of the parking lot, like father like son in this, too. Curtis had always lingered longest at the window. If that was, he had time to linger. He wouldn't make time, though, because the Buick never took precedence. If it had, he and I almost certainly would have come to blows that night at the Tap instead of finding a way to laugh and back off. We found a way because us getting into a scrape would have been bad for the troop, and he kept the troop ahead of everything, the Buick, his wife, his family when the family came. I once asked him what he was proudest of in his life. This was around 1986, and I imagined he'd say his son. His response was, the uniform. I understood that and responded to it. But I'd be wrong not to add that the answer horrified me a little as well. But it saved him, you know. His pride in the job he did and the uniform he wore held him steady when the Buick might otherwise have unbalanced him, driven him into an obsessional madness. Didn't the job also get him killed? I suppose. But there were years in between, a lot of good years. And now there was this kid who was troubling because he didn't have the job to balance him. All he had was a lot of questions and the naive belief that just because he felt he needed the answers, those answers would come. Bosh, his father might have said.